Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Big Joe Dubin. Michelle Knezovic, intern Hanley here with you on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, we have a special guest.
All right, we do. So early this week we were talking about with the Tennessee Vols seem to be trending upwards now with Heupel. And Robbie, you said, he said, man, these last 10 years, boy, they were something else before Heupel. And I thought, well, you know what? There's a good friend of mine that wrote a book called Decade of Dysfunction about Tennessee football and just the chaos it was from Fulmer all the way up to Schiano and the all that stuff that went on. I said, we got to get a hold of Mark Nagy, who wrote this book. So Mark joins us this morning. Mark, it's so good to talk to you, my friend.
Joe, it is great to talk to you. Robbie, how are you? It's great to be on with you guys.
Well, we are great. Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning.
You know, Mark, the book came out in 2018. It's still as relevant today as it was back then. And the book is Tennessee fans, if you don't have this book, you need to go out and get it. Mark, what was the genesis of you wanting to write this book?
Well, you know, I think I just kind of looked at the 10 years from the end of the Fulmer era to the end of the Butch Jones era and all the mess that Schiano Sunday turned into and everything around it. And I just kind of wanted to document it. I felt like it was kind of like a history book to go through everything that Tennessee athletics had been through for that 10 years and just put it into one full document and then just decide to make a book out of it. Because if you really just look at what Tennessee athletics went through for that decade, I can't imagine any athletic department having that kind of just constant trauma like Tennessee had between 2008 and 2017.
I think it's a miracle you got this under 400 pages, because I think you could have written this like War and Peace, like 3,000 pages on this. So there was so much material that you had to do with Fulmer, with Kiffin, to Dooley, to Butch Jones, and then Schiano. I mean, it was just all right there in front of you, and now you had to pare it down to make it well. And I own the book, and it's so fantastic how you put it all together. You got to start with what happened in Fulmer in 2008, because Mark, you covered sports in Knoxville for many years. I don't think anybody saw what was going to happen the next 10 years when Fulmer stepped down.
Well, I mean, think about it. Tennessee, when they fired Phil Fulmer only 11 months previous, they're leading in the fourth quarter of the SEC championship game against LSU. And then, you know, less than a year later, Fulmer's out, and then they hire the complete anti-Fulmer in Lane Kiffin. And then after Kiffin, they hire the complete anti-Lane Kiffin in Derek Dooley. And in Butch Jones, for the most part, was an anti-Derek Dooley. So it just, you couldn't make this kind of stuff up. But it's hard to, an entire generation of Tennessee fans has grown up not knowing how dominant Tennessee used to be. I mean, 95 to 99, Tennessee goes, I think it was 45-5 with two conference titles and a national championship. And Tennessee hasn't won 10 games in a single season since 2007. So it's really hard to believe, I'm sure, for the new generation that has grown up loving Tennessee athletics, to know that there was a time, a pre-HD TV time, when Tennessee was one of the top programs in the entire country.
Mark Nagy on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. And Mark, it's incredible to think about. I mean, you brought up Schiano Sunday. The fact that that happened and the Kiffin situation of leaving in the middle of the night happened in the same program, much less in a 10-year span, is borderline unbelievable to me, still to this day.
Well, I've been asked by people many times what I thought the craziest night in the history of Tennessee athletics was. And the night that Lane Kiffin left, for years and years, I'm like, well, nothing's ever going to top this. And then came Schiano Sunday. I mean, Schiano Sunday was something, you know, unseen before in the history of collegiate sports, really in the history of sports period in this country. I couldn't think of anything that kind of compares to it. A fan uprising that took place on multiple fronts, including boots on the ground on campus, social media, state politicians, boosters, you know, and most importantly, just the complete fan uprising. I mean, it got so bad that day and night that former athletic director John Curry had to get a new cell phone because he just kept getting too many emails and texts from irate Tennessee fans. I mean, the public records request, when that document dump came out, you really saw the thousands of just angry messages that Tennessee's athletic department was getting. Still to this day, I look back at just the decision that everybody the powers would be, everybody thought that hiring Greg Schiano was going to unite the fan base. Well, it actually, but you know what? In a weird way, it did, didn't it?
Yeah.
It's the fan base in the complete opposite way that everyone had expected. But at least for the first time in about 10 years, everybody was on the same page when it came to Tennessee fans.
Well, and Mark, it's interesting to view this now with a little bit of distance from it, too, because now you've gone through the Jeremy Pruitt era as well, and that had a crazy end to it. And Josh Heupel has taken over. And, Mark, for the first time in a while, it kind of feels like things are somewhat stabilizing with the Tennessee football program. Recruiting's going well. They overachieved in his first year. They've got a very exciting offense. But I will say, as somebody who's followed Tennessee football for a long time, this last 10, 15-year period always makes me a little skeptical viewing the Vols as we move forward here.
Oh, certainly. I mean, we've kind of been down this road before. I know it feels a little different this time, and I think a big part of that is just because the entire athletic department seems to be pushed in the right direction. You have non-revenue sports like women's soccer that are bringing home trophies. Both basketball programs are at a very high level right now. I think that, you know, men's basketball just wins the SEC tournament. Women's basketball should be a legitimate Final Four contender next year. You know, Tennessee's baseball program, we all see what they were able to accomplish, even though it finished shy of Omaha. And football, you know, goes from 3 wins in the COVID year to 7 wins. And really, they could have won a couple more games last year had they gotten a couple of calls or the ball bounced the right way. It does feel different this time. It feels like we have adults in the room and that everyone is kind of pushing in the right direction. But if you're a Tennessee fan, yes, you've been down this road before, and you just don't want to give your heart fully yet, because you just don't want it to be broken again.
Mark Nager with us wrote the great book called Decade of Dysfunction. Mark, Rob and I were laughing the other day about the day that Butch Jones came out midway through the 2017 season and blamed the media for all the problems within the program. And that's when I knew, Mark, that it was over for Butch. When you go after the media right then, and that just kind of added to everything that you had for those 10 years of the dysfunction. That was, again, part of the dysfunction that was going on. And to me, that day when Butch did that with the media and blamed them, I was like, yep, he's done.
No, I'd agree with you. I mean, the fact that they didn't get over the hump in 2015 or 2016, when they had the most talents in the SECs and they couldn't win the division in either of those years, especially 2016, when you've beaten Georgia and Florida and you still only end up 4-4 in the SEC. And then 2017. And the thing is this, if they win the SEC East one of those years, I think in 2017, you kind of give Butch Jones a mulligan, because they look at what they did with Fulmer. They fired him 11 months after winning the SEC East, and they wouldn't have done the same thing to Butch. I think Butch would have been the head coach in 2018 had they won the East in 2015 or 2016. Instead, 2017 went completely to hell. Butch Jones couldn't handle it. And, yeah, and that media of the opportunity where he just decides to rip on everybody and expecting local media and statewide media to be like an extension of Tennessee's athletic department to help in recruiting. You could tell right at that moment that it was not going to end well.
Hey, Mark, the other day we had Josh Ward on the show, and we asked him about, because social media on Tuesday, was my feed was filled with people taking pictures and talking about putting the VOLS back up at Neyland Stadium. And that was taken down during this decade of dysfunction, wasn't it?
No, it was taken down when they brought the Jumbotron in on the south end zone, I believe.
Okay. All
because,
right.
Because remember, the VOLS was directly behind the goalposts, basically, and then they brought the Jumbotron in there, and they didn't put the letters on either side. So, no, I think that was in the early 2000s.
Okay, good. Well, the fact that it's back now, and you talk about steps in the right directions, and you talk about Danny White was talking about the athletic director. To me, that it's simple. It's just 4 letters on top of Neyland Stadium, but I think as a Tennessee fan, that was huge to see that, and it kind of felt like another giant step in the right direction.
Well, last October, Danny White brought the old VOLS letters out of storage and put them outside of Gate 21 at Neyland Stadium before the South Carolina game, and fans flocked to them. They came, took pictures. It was a nice remembrance of a positive time for Tennessee athletics. If you look at the old clips of the 95 game, Tennessee beats Georgia in the final seconds on a Jeff Hall kick. Fireworks go off, the crane camera comes up, and you see those VOLS. 1998, they beat Florida. There's a classic picture of two lunatics hanging on the ripped-down goalpost at the south end zone, and you see the VOLS there. It makes Tennessee fans feel that, you know, what Tennessee football used to be and maybe what Tennessee football can be again. I've been down on campus looking at them. They look terrific, and I think that that's going to be another one of those spots that Tennessee fans before games or even in the off season they come by, take their picture with those VOLS letters, and Danny White, he's pushed a lot of the right buttons in the little bit over a year that he's been the athletic director. You had athletic directors like Dave Hart who really didn't listen to Tennessee fans. Danny White seems to be one of those guys that does.
So, Mark, to that point, we're just a few weeks away now from fall camp for Josh Heupel in year two. What are your expectations for this Tennessee team heading into his second year?
I think that Tennessee will be a little bit better than they were. The key for Tennessee and for this program is you have to get a win against one of the big three in terms of your rivals. That would be Florida, Georgia, and Alabama. You get Florida and Alabama at home. Florida's had a coaching change. I think, you know, beating Georgia or Alabama would be a bit much for Tennessee's program right now, but it all lines up that they've got to get that Florida win. If you do, the odds are that you're going to win at least 8 games. That shows that you've got progress from last year winning 7 games, and I think a lot of Tennessee fans are really happy no matter what happens the rest of the way if you can reach those 2 marks. You've got the offense in place. You've got playmakers. You've got Hooker back at quarterback. I think that Tennessee football should be a little bit better than they were last year. But again, the key is to get one of those wins over one of your biggest rivals. Think about it. They haven't beaten Georgia since 2016, haven't beaten Alabama since 2006, and have only beaten Florida once in the past 15 years. You've got to find a way to get one of those victories.
Yep, no question about it. Mark, great stuff as always. Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning. And once again, go check out the book Decade of Dysfunction that Mark has written. Mark, thanks so much.
Robbie, Joe, great talking to you guys. Have a great day.
Absolutely, you as well. Mark Nagy, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road.
I got to talk when we come back. I want you. You followed Tennessee football for a long time, right?
Oh, yeah.
All right. I want to know who your favorite player. Don't tell me.
Okay.
Just your all-time favorite player. And it cannot be Peyton Manning.
It's not.
Or Al Wilson.
It's not.
Okay.
We'll get to that coming up next. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 1025, 1063, The Game, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Friday morning in Nashville, Tennessee.
All right, a few weeks ago, Robbie knows I hosted the Peyton Manning event in town. And so before I
went up, flex.
So what's that?
Said slight flex.
It's humble brag, right? So Robbie knows the story behind the scenes with Peyton, and I'm not going to get into it. It's something next level. So before I get to the stage to introduce Peyton to the stage, they said, hold on a second. There's a special performance that's going to sing, and the great Jeannie Seeley gets up there, Hall of Fame. She's wonderful and beautiful, and she just starts singing a cappella Rocky Top.
Oh, yeah.
So immediately I had to look at Peyton, and he just went through the motions of clapping, and, you know, he did not do the woo part about that, but they did the Rocky.
I expect more.
Yeah, they did the Rocky Top, and of course Genie nailed it, and it was great. But just watching, I'm not gonna say that he was annoyed or he just kind of let's get through this and get to the Q&A part.
I love that song as much as I don't like Tennessee because I'm a Kentucky fan. I absolutely love that song.
You've adopted Tennessee baseball as your team. And you love Rocky Top, and you're going to sit here and talk about how you're not a Tennessee fan.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you need to clarify that you went to the University of Kentucky, correct?
Correct.
Okay. If you're just like, I'm a Kentucky fan, like, why? But if you went, if you, but you say you went to Kentucky, it has a whole different meaning instead of like, all right, you're in Nashville, you should like tennis. What I mean, you should, whatever. But the fact that you went to Kentucky.
Yes.
That's like,
yes.
Okay, I get it now.
Yeah. Kentucky, like Kentucky introduced fan. Me to the SEC. And Robbie, you're right. I don't like Tennessee football or basketball. Love Tennessee baseball and love Rocky Top.
All right.
Here we go.
You sound like Kenny Chesney. It's like he's a fan of every team.
Kenny Chesney shows up in Lexington. Hey, how about those Wildcats? Yeah, come on.
Everywhere. He's got pictures with every coach. And yeah, big fan. So you're the female Kenny Chesney that goes on there. Well
he's
done.
He's pretty successful. So
He is. There's no question about
he
it.
He is. And you could put your elbow on his head because you're much taller than
you
he
is. You could also do that.
Yeah. Then they counter about, well, he's got all that money. That's fine, though. But you know what? You can't buy height.
They haven't figured out how to do that yet. You should get some stilts.
All right, so before we went there, Robbie asked, Tennessee football, I mean, I grew up here, so there's players who, when you grew up watching Tennessee football, that you just adore, who became like your favorite. So who is your favorite Tennessee football player?
My favorite Tennessee football player of all time is Eric Berry.
Yeah.
I love Eric Berry. And it's weird because, you know, I'm an offensive guy. I like watching offense. But defensively, he was so much fun. Every time he intercepted the ball, it seemed like he was taking it to the house. He destroyed people. There was a collision. I think it was 09. It may have been 08 with him and Tebow.
09.
Yeah, it was 09.
Yep.
Him and Tebow kind of meeting head-to-head. And, you know, Florida obviously won that game. But just I loved watching Eric Berry play football.
Yeah, that was a great – that was hit because you thought, oh, my goodness. And you had a whole new respect for Tebow after that because Berry came flying through.
Now, he rocked Sean Moreno, the running back
for
in Georgia too.
Yes.
I mean, Eric Berry could lay the wood.
So that year, they opened the season against Western Kentucky. And I know the offensive coordinator. And so all these teams script plays, right? So, you know, you had the first 15 plays of the game scripted. First play, you run and you get like 2 yards. Second play was a rollout. And Eric Berry came on a blitz. And it was like a 12-yard loss.
Yeah.
So I asked the coach, I said, hey, how did the scripting go for the opening of the game? He's like, well, you kind of hope Eric Berry wouldn't have done that. He goes, but the fact that he did, it just threw everything out. And, you know, Tennessee lost, Tennessee won like 63-7 that day. But Eric Berry, within the first two plays of the game, set the entire tone for that game.
I always think about him because he was so good at Tennessee, and he was a great player in the NFL. And then, of course, you know, he dealt with cancer, and he overcame it. But, you know, he was never quite the same after that battle was over. I mean, he had an intense battle with cancer. I always wonder, obviously just really, really glad that he's okay and that, you know, he's still with us. But I always do wonder, you know, had that not happened, what sort of a player could he turn into? I mean, he's only 33 right now. Like, he could still be in the league. I always wonder, you know, kind of what that would have looked like.
Well, he was Vrabel's teammate for 1 year at Kansas City in 2010. So you talk about, well, he's that young. Well, he's been in the league, was in the league for quite a while. But I totally agree. And the Times interviewed him, so humble, so nice. And it's just awful what happened to him. And I hope that he is healthy for the rest of his life. My favorite player, and I go back, and I'm, of course, twice your age almost. But I go back to my favorite player. And I don't have a favorite team in college football. I just like games, and I like some players who just step up next level. And so I've always been a massive Dell Jones fan. Dell Jones, to me, what he did against Alabama in 1985, intercepting the pass and that team and watching Dell Jones do all that, he was always just – and he was a guy that was not big, but my goodness, he gave everything he had. And that's what you want in a football team, is a guy who gives you everything he has and makes others around him better. So Dell Jones is the one that I loved. And then that 85 season, you go back, Tony Robinson – You know, that's the year that Bo Jackson won the Heisman Trophy. If Tony Robinson does not get hurt against Alabama, he wins the Heisman Trophy that year, because that game when Sports Illustrated came to Knoxville to do a story on Bo Jackson, and the Tennessee just shut him down. They won 38-20 that game. That Tony Robinson went to the next level. And I know Chuck Long for Iowa came in second the year of the Heisman Trophy, and it was the closest vote of all time. But had Tony Robinson stayed healthy in 85, he'd won the Heisman Trophy. So I always felt bad about that. What happened, of course, Tennessee goes on and punches Miami in the face in the Sugar Bowl, which was an amazing moment. And God, it's hard to believe that's 37 years ago. But yeah, still very, very fluid in my mind.
I remember young Robbie Stanley back in the day. I thought Kelly Washington at Tennessee was going to be the greatest wide receiver of all time.
Because he was as old as your grandfather. Yeah. That's right. He was 57 running those routes back then. So that's what was going on. He was. He put on a show in 01 against Michigan in the Citrus Bowl.
Yeah, he's a freshman. And he had 1,000 yards, 5 touchdowns that year.
Yeah, how old was he? Was he 20? Because he played
older,
baseball.
Yeah.
And he went and did all that. And then you talk about underrated, but I think Casey Clawson does not get talked about nearly enough in quarterback lore at the University of Tennessee. Because you could name quarterbacks. You go Robinson, then Daryl Dickey filled in for him, then Andy Kelly, Sterling Hinton, and then Schuler was fantastic. Yeah. Then Peyton, and then T. Martin, and on and on. But Clawson, I mean, they beat Florida down there twice, I think.
Well, I was talking with somebody about this, I think last year, right around the time the season started. You know, Tennessee's been looking for a quarterback, and we didn't know what Hendon Hooker was at this point last year. I was like, everybody just sleeps on Casey Clawson. Like, I would certainly take another Casey Clawson in Tennessee right now.
He looked like Iceman in the original Top Gun. I mean, he was really, really good. And, you know, and to me, Dobbs is undervalued, but we still talk about Dobbs in a pleasant light. But Clawson's name never gets brought up. Never gets brought up for what he did from, 2000 to 2003.
Yeah.
Maybe because he didn't go to the pros and make an impact there, which, to me, I've been very good at separating your college from pro career. Yeah. Because you look at somebody like Drew Bennett, who basically walks along for the Titans in 2001, had a career at UCLA, and has this great career in the NFL where ends up signing a monster free agent deal with the Rams, which, by the way, is rated one of the worst free agent deals of all time because he was awful at the Rams. But, oh, well. But you just talk about college, pure college of what he did. Clawson was fantastic.
Well, there's also, like, everybody views a Ryan Leaf or a Jamarcus Russell. The only thing they remember about him is, they're a bust in the NFL. Pretty darn good college players.
They were. Russell was with LSU when they went up and beat Knoxville in 2006.
Yeah.
Couldn't stop him. I remember getting on the field after the game, I'm thinking, this guy is a quarterback? He's massive. Yeah. He's huge. But you're correct. They all think about, well, in the NFL, he was a bust. But go back and just play the college. I mean, he was really, really good in college. I mean, enough that he was the first pick in the draft.
Well, Mark Nagy brought up, like, the big three for Tennessee. So, obviously, that's Georgia, Florida, and Alabama. And you've got to find a way to have more success against those teams. The last time they beat Alabama was 06, which, by the way, was the year before Nick Saban got there. Mm-hmm. I was at that game. I was 14. I'll be 30 coming up in September.
That's the last
That's how
time.
Long it's been.
Oh, my goodness. Was that the 6-3 game?
No, it was Arian Foster scored like a late touchdown in that game. But it was like 17-14 or something. Yeah, okay. It was not overly high scoring.
Gotcha.
But that was the last time.
How do you think about that, 2006?
Mike Shula was the coach for Alabama.
I did a Google search about Mike Shula. I did a Google search right now for Tennessee versus Alabama football, and the first question that people ask, has Tennessee ever beat Alabama in football? That's the first question that comes up there.
Oh boy.
I thought in the one game, what was the game Pruitt had? Was it 19 where they played really good, and then the referee called that phantom timeout when Tennessee switched their offense at the goal line, and they were allowed to do it, and the coach stopped the game for a brief moment. I mean, the ref stopped the game for a brief moment.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Pruitt went
nuts.
Bonkers.
Oh, yeah.
Bonkers. That's also the game where you grab Garantano, and everybody's like, "Hey, you don't grab a coach, you don't grab a player like that," and blah, blah, blah. That was a fit. That boy, that lit up. That's something Rex Road could get behind. That lit up Twitter that night. I'm gonna find this.
You're all over Rex Road on Twitter.
I've got him, man. He can't defend himself. 2005, Alabama in Tuscaloosa beat Tennessee 6-3.
Yeah.
So in the year you watched Knoxville, yeah, they won 16-13. And then from then on, and I was at the game in 2009 Tuscaloosa when Crompton and those guys and Kiffin, they lost 12-10 and they blocked the field goal. And people are like, wow, they made that field goal. Let me tell you what, I was under the goalpost. That ball would have never made, I mean, he was.
Like, it hit him in the chest.
Yeah. It wouldn't have cleared the line of scrimmage. But also in that game, was it Terrence Cody who blocked it? So when he blocked it, the ball is still live, correct? So when he's running.
He rips his helmet off.
Which should have been a penalty.
Yep.
Could you imagine?
If they'd call that.
In Tuscaloosa, call that a 15-yard penalty. He gets another shot. That would have been absolute chaos in the state of Alabama, but he didn't, and Tennessee loses a game 12-10. That's probably the closest they've been since then.
615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We got more of your thoughts to get to coming up next on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on 1025-1063, The Game. I got some tickets to give away to see Styx and REO Speedwagon with Loverboy coming up at Ascend Amphitheater on Monday, August 8th. Be caller number 5, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Caller number 5 will win a pair of tickets to see Styx and REO Speedwagon with Loverboy coming up at Ascend Amphitheater on Monday, August 8th. 615-737-1025. 1025. We're taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Mike from Shelbyville texting in says, we need to go back and find Big Joe's NHL Central scouting report when he was coming out of McGavick after an impressive tenure with the Ice Raiders. Is coming from Mike from Shelbyville. Big hockey player, Joe.
Yeah,
Dooley.
I had good hands, but I wasn't quick, and I was prone to fight once the puck dropped. So yes. there was no place for me in the league then.
Maybe now.
Yeah.
Never too old to try.
I told Trotz one time on this radio station in this studio, we had him on. I said, if you need a guy who just goes in and fights for about 30 seconds, I'd love to. I'd get my face bashed in, but I'd like to do that. But the problem is I can only hold on to the sideboard because I can't skate.
They're going to have to come to me.
Yeah. Right. So it's one hand that I'm doing that right there to get
right.
it on.
Josh on the text line says, I'm not a Tennessee fan by any means, but my all-time favorite Vol is Chad Clifton. And then points out he's from the Martin area.
That's right.
Yeah.
The heck of a player Chad Clifton was.
He was.
Big
great
dude.
Green Bay Packer, too.
He was a great dude. Yeah, and then I always get him and Trey Teague confused.
Yeah.
Because Trey played with the Broncos, I think it was. Which one is like the state hunting director or wildlife guy?
I don't know.
It's Clifton or Trey Teague. One of those two is, and I'll find that out there. Wow, he played 12 years for the Packers, Clifton did.
Yeah, he did.
Won a Super Bowl.
Yeah. Legend.
Yeah, he is.
That's right.
Nice.
Andrew from Dover says Sean Alexander from Alabama, his favorite player of all time. He did not play for Tennessee. He did play against Tennessee.
He did not. He had some good games versus Tennessee,
He's
too.
Pretty darn good, though.
He was a great running back.
It really is kind of – when you think about the running backs that have come through Alabama in the last 15, 20 years – you know, everybody talks about Mark Ingram and Derrick Henry. I mean, Sean Alexander is pretty darn good.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, you know, Alvin Kamara was an Alabama running back that went through there. But all those guys. Who's the big guy that ate his way out of the league was a Packer? What was his name?
Eddie Lacy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But he was great in college.
He was fantastic in college. He was fantastic. So there was a lot.
I mean, even Trent Richardson was really good at Alabama.
What in the world?
He got drafted, what, like fourth overall?
Yeah, by the Colts.
Yeah.
God, I forgot all about him. Those running backs. I mean, that's been something else that's rolled through Tuscaloosa that way since Saban's been there.
Oh, yeah.
We're leaving out one guy that they could never tackle that was before Henry. Oh, my goodness. Like number four. Look it up here.
Talk before Henry?
Yourself. Yeah.
I don't know. We'll have to figure that out. Whispering Bill on the text line says, love that discussion on favorite players. Mine is William Howard. It's coming from Whispering Bill.
Yeah, fullback. Played in Knoxville, number 35. I remember he was from like Lima, Ohio. back in the
day. You talk about my knowledge. You remember William Howard's number.
Yeah, I do. I remember college football from like 82 to 91, 92 vividly. I mean, I Whit Taylor at Vanderbilt, the quarterback then. I mean, they went to the Hall of Fame game, and they got beat by Air Force in 1982. But that team was fun. I mean, Watson Brown was offensive coordinator. They threw the ball up and down the field. That was a fun team to watch. I vividly remember that team for Vanderbilt. And I'll never forget Beano Cook when he went on Saturday Night Football and talked about the SEC and said the only way that Vanderbilt goes to win the SEC is if the other nine teams go on probation. And that just, can you imagine a guy saying that today? I mean, it just, he lit the world on fire with that comment right then.
Jim in Nashville on the text line says, Big Joe, explain why Nashville TV sports reporters always showcase Tennessee athletics over Vanderbilt when Vanderbilt is the hometown school. It's coming from Jim.
Great question, and I will counter with this. Vanderbilt graduates don't stay here. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
They go and they're gone. Tennessee is the state football. I mean, it's a state university, and you might not like this, but this is my reasoning with it. So there's more to the state of Tennessee and more to Nashville than just Nashville. I mean, you got to look at these surrounding areas. Portland, Murfreesboro, Hendersonville, Springfield, Dixon. They're massive Tennessee volunteer football fans in those areas, more so than Tennessee Titan football fans. And I counted them with saying, I had a good friend that worked in the Raleigh market. All right, so in Raleigh, you've got Duke, UNC, and NC State.
And they're all within 8 miles of each
other. Yes. So they do, in Raleigh, they do really heavy coverage of NC State. And I said, why? He's like, Duke and UNC graduates don't stay here. They're gone. This place is peppered with NC State graduates. So my thing was, Tennessee, you know, and it'd always be Tennessee and football coverage first. Vanderbilt would be second every single time. And then I would drop down to MTSU. I just did the locals that way, what I'd always do. So to me, when I'm listening about Raleigh, about NC State people, the same here. I mean, there's Tennessee football fans. Whether you like them or not, you're still going to pay attention to that. And I always counter with this, Robbie, that in terms of coverage, to me, the Titans, if you're looking just in terms of coverage, Titans and the Vols, to me, are always neck and neck. And third to me, and you're going to laugh, right? Kentucky basketball.
Yeah.
People always want to know here in Nashville about Kentucky basketball.
There's massive amounts of
Kentucky basketball fans that are in the viewing area.
Massive.
It was the Vols, Titans, and then it was Kentucky basketball, and then everything else drops in after that. Then it slowly creeped up, become where Alabama football now is there. So you could basically go now with Tennessee Vols football, the Titans right underneath them, and then Alabama up there football, and then Kentucky basketball. That's the way I always perceived things were, and there's no, you know, official research report that goes on, but just seeing the fan bases, talking to the fan bases, and that's the way it is. You know, it's just it's an order of selections. That's why Vanderbilt was always there. Now, if Vanderbilt wouldn't played, I don't know, Georgia and Tennessee's playing Wake Forest that weekend, it's pretty, you know, you would determine who they're playing, and in terms of importance, Vanderbilt would get the bump up. I did get in trouble. Vanderbilt fans were not happy with me when Alabama, Justin Beasley remembers this vividly. Alabama beat Vanderbilt 59-0 a few years ago over there at Dudley, right? So I did the sports cast in the very end. Paul Hagan gave the pollen report. At the very end of the newscast, he said, hey, the pollen score is 8 today. And I said, oh, look at that. Pollen outscored Vanderbilt today. And there were some Vanderbilt fans were not. And my thing was, you don't like it, score points, win games. You go all that back.
Lighten up a little bit. Yeah, come on.
It's just, you know, that day pollen had a really good defense.
What are you supposed to say after it's
Exactly. And it was all, I mean, it was like night and day in that football between the two teams. And
it's like doing a sports cast that day that the Patriots beat the Titans 59-0 in the snow. Like, what do you do with that?
Oh, man. That's funny, that sports cast that day of 2009, Chris Johnson ran for 100 yards that day.
Yeah.
So I had him on my fantasy team and said, hey, you know what? They might have got beat 59-0, but Chris Johnson got me those 100 yards for my fantasy team. So not all is lost for me. But that game, that's a sports cast I'll never forget, because our camera guy at the time at Channel 2 went up there to cover the game. I think him and Corey Curtis went up there, and snow was not predicted. And my man had a T-shirt. And I remember seeing him on the sidelines in his T-shirt, covered in snow, freezing to death.
Which, by the way, the game was in like late October, right?
Right, it was.
It wasn't like it's a December game.
And that's the game. Michael Griffin was awful.
Oh, yeah.
Awful in that game. And the next day over there at the facility talking to him, he'd had a argument with his girlfriend or something, and he admitted that his mind wasn't in the game. I was like, oh, man. But I firmly believe that day the Patriots could have dropped 100 on the tie. And I'm serious.
Yeah.
They laid back. I mean, Randy Moss
had like four touchdowns in that game.
He was wide open the entire game. And they probably could have gotten to the 80s against Tennessee on that day.
Oh, yeah.
I'll never forget that.
It was unbelievable. Will on Twitter says, it's the little things that have saved Bama's butt in those close Tennessee games that what makes me feel like the fix is in. It's coming from Will on Twitter.
Well, 2019, when Tennessee switched their offense at the last second, the referee, I know there's video out there because Pruitt lost his mind.
Yeah. And that was right before the Garantano quarterback sneak at the goal line where he tried to put the ball over.
Terrible.
Well.
And Tennessee lost that game 35-13, but that was not indicative of how close the game was. They blew it off in the fourth quarter. Alabama did, but yeah, that's one of those things. But I'm going back and seeing that 2015, Alabama only won by – that's when Jalen Hurd scored late in the game, and Derrick Henry came back down and scored. So that was the closest game then at 19-14.
Yeah. It's been a very one-sided series as of late, as my parents remind me all the time.
It has been. And what was the game? I remember, so 95 through 01, they won seven in a row. Tennessee did.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of back and forth. But you look at the score page now, and like the reds for Alabama, like big blocks of red, small blocks of orange, huge blocks of red, small blocks of orange, though. But when Tennessee beat Alabama the first time in 1982 in a long time, that's when they lifted majors up, and that was Bear Bryant's last time in Knoxville.
Yep, absolutely. Coming up next, it is time for the Rob Rant. We'll get to that coming up on the other side. 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road. You're on 1025, 1063, the game.
The time is now for the Rex Rant.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
On Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN, 1025 The Game, and the Game Nashville app.
Cause you make my heart race. Shot me out of the sky.
And it is that time of the day, time for the Rob Rant, here on 1025-1063 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Dubin. Michelle Knezovic, intern Hanley, here with you.
What? Who is this?
One Direction. Okay. Come on.
Okay. Yeah, I thought you had all this memorized.
I got most of it memorized. I don't remember this song.
Probably one thing, it was their second most popular song.
The second most.
This is?
The second most popular song.
What's the most popular
song? How do you rank these?
What Makes You Beautiful, the one I played the other day. Oh, and you smile. Were like, I am such a One Direction fan.
I don't remember this, but anyway, what's the one now that's
your jaw structure? A lot of things.
Like, right. Yeah. The real, now it's like, we're only getting older, baby. Doesn't make you
The Night Changes or Story of My Life?
That's
Night Changes.
We're only getting older, baby. Yeah, that's a good song.
That's an OG song.
Thank you. What does that mean?
Like original. OG. Original.
Oh, okay. I like OG.
That's an OG. Like, you're an OG of Nashville because you know, like, everything historically.
That might be the sweetest thing I've ever been called.
Yeah.
Let Rex Road know that when he comes back in 4 weeks.
Please tell him sometime in 2023 when he returns.
Let him know that. Thank you.
Oh, man. All right. My rant for the day. So, Joe, I've recently started reattending the gym because I'm almost 30 years old, and quite frankly, I'm just not in the shape that I used to be.
Right.
Both figuratively and physically as well. So I've been in the gym the last few weeks. I'm going to the Y. And one thing that continues to be a common theme that I don't for the life of me understand, and it's the same guy every time. He's in there. He's in the Y.
Yes.
He's doing his thing. Sometimes he's in the, you know, the actual workout room on the treadmill or whatever, or other times he's like sitting outside in the lobby in the chair. But he's got, I don't even know what show it is, on his phone. And it's blasting at full volume, no matter where he is. He could be on the treadmill. A lot of times he is in the lobby, like just sitting there watching it, where the entire lobby can hear whatever show it is that this person is watching. It's 2022, man. You got to find some AirPods, some headphones, something. But the last thing that I want to hear while I'm working out, even over my headphones that have things playing in them, is your show from 1987 while you're sitting there on the treadmill doing this thing. It's unbelievable. And it's the same guy every day. And I've been at different times. He's there all day. He's there the whole time.
Is he fit at least?
No.
Okay.
Now, I will fully admit, a little bit older guy.
Okay.
You know, probably.
It's not me. Just let people know.
Probably in 60s or 70s would be my guess.
What show is he watching?
I have no clue. It's just very loud.
Probably Deadwood or one of those old 6 Feet Under, one of those old HBO shows. Are you just a giant sissy and won't tell him to put it down or to turn it down, or what's your approach here?
Do I want to be the guy that ruins the old man's day? That's kind of the question that it boils down to. I mean, you can tell.
Is he ruining
your day? Well, no. I mean, I get over it, but there are people in there that they hear this noise, and you could see the look on their face. Like, where is this coming from? Like, what is this? And then they finally piece it together, like, oh, this guy over here on the treadmill.
Right.
Who I don't know if he's got like a boombox built into his phone or something. I swear to you, the volume on this phone is louder than any phone I've ever heard in my life. It's unbelievable.
Now, his conversation with his buddies are, hey, there's this guy, this ginger with this beard who comes all the time who just stares at me nonstop. Yeah, just, and he's always in the gym.
With a look on his face. He's always in the gym.
When I'm there, he's always there. You know, you can go on these gym rants for a long time. I like the guy who walks around the gym, and this has happened, and you folks, you know this guy, and tells you what you're doing wrong.
Oh, yeah.
But he never lifts a damn weight the entire time he's in there. He just walks around and says, hey, bend your knees on that one.
Thanks, coach.
And I'm just like, okay, thank you. The only thing that make him better if he's wearing those old bike coaching shorts the 80s that were pulled up to your neck. We all remember our high school football coaches wearing those in the 70s and 80s wearing those. But it's always that one guy who walks around and doesn't do anything and just tells you how things are going.
Like the power cleaners or the bench pressers over there that are just they're like halfway through a set, and it's all of a sudden you just hear this big just shouting, bringing this thing up, and it's like, oh, okay.
Like, what's happening?
No, Robbie, that I almost did a rant on this. I was in the gym the other day. How about this? Every single rep just aggressively grunting. And this is an apartment gym, so it's not very big. Probably as big as this studio, a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
Just grunting like what you just did on every single rep. And there's about 3 people in the gym.
Yeah.
You think the guy would get the hint. He's like screaming. Rah! I'm like, okay.
It's like the tennis players who scream every time they hit the ball.
Yeah, I love that. Also, and there's a guy, and I go work out at a gym in Hermitage named Competitive Edge. Love the gym. And there's a guy who's in there all the time, like your guy, Robbie. But this guy, all he wants to do is talk to you.
Oh, yeah.
So I purposely have this plan to avoid him at all times. And he'll make his way to you and start talking about things. Like TV, like, hey, did you catch that game the other night? And like, I don't know what game you're talking about. And you're nice to him. But once you make it, so it's like the kiosk worker at Opry Mills, right? Yeah. When you're walking through, if you make eye contact, you're done.
Yeah, you're in trouble.
They got you. But if you keep your head down, you're good. And same way with this guy. He just wants to talk nonstop. He's another guy. And what he does, he'll talk to you. He'll go to the leg press, do like 4 sets or 4 reps, and then next thing you know, he's doing arms. The next thing you know, he's over there doing some sort of squat. I mean, it's just there's no rhyme or reason to his workout, but I just know when I see him, I've got a plan to avoid him every single time.
I've also learned, and this is maybe more of a general life thing, people are really bad at following simple directions. Like they're at the YMCA, you go to the track, and you're running, walking, whatever you're doing, but they've got a sign listed in multiple areas on the track. All right, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, this is the direction that you walk or run. Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday, this is the direction that you walk or run. and the amount of people that, while other people are going the proper direction, will turn around and run the opposite way. Right. It's unbelievable to me. Like, I was running the other day, and this guy is, like, running directly at me, and I'm like, can you not see this sign? Mm-hmm. By the way, even if you can't see the sign, there's 12 other people on this track running the same way. Like, you ought to follow probably some contextual clues at that point.
Which, is this the Springfield YMCA?
This was the Springfield YMCA.
Okay. Yeah. I've seen that,
I go back and forth between Springfield and Hendersonville, but yeah.
Hendersonville Y is nice.
It's pretty nice.
It's and they redid the Donaldson Y, but the Hendersonville Y is really, really nice. Not as good as the downtown Y, seeing Sporty Spice work out.
That's true.
Would you tell Sporty Spice to turn around and run the right way?
Yeah, I would.
I think you have to.
You better run the right way.
Because it's like a head-on collision on the track.
Just, you're asking for trouble.
You don't need that. And then don't get me started about the locker room where some guys feel free just to walk around totally buck naked and have conversations with you.
It's unbelievable. You
know? And they're
it's
all crazy. In their 70s.
Oh,
and
yeah.
They love doing that.
Every
like,
time.
I'm good.
It's like, man, I got anywhere to be but here right now, buddy. I'll talk to you later.
I go in the locker room and change like Sandra Bullock in Bird Box. I don't look around. I have a blindfold on, and hopefully I put my clothes on correct and get back out of there.
Yeah, it is a problem at the gym. There is no question about it. This has been the Rob Rant. You can check it out. We hit on a variety of different subjects there every morning at 7:45 here on the show. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, host of Talking with TD. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game.